Welcome to the Advancing Women Podcast, where ambitious women come together to challenge the status quo, advance their careers, and up-level their lives. The Advancing Women Podcast is hosted by gender equity expert and executive coach, Dr. Kimberly DeSimone.
Welcome, warriors, to the Advancing Women Podcast. Do you ever have one of those mornings where when you first wake up, and you're lying in bed and thinking about what the day looks like ahead of you, and then you immediately feel giddy because you know you've got something awesome going on that day that you're really excited about? That is how I feel today, knowing that I was going to be chatting with a very special guest on the Advancing Women Podcast, content creator and YouTuber extraordinaire, Jen LaForge. I originally found Jen through my love of Disney when I stumbled upon an episode on her channel about her trip to Disney. But I was then compelled to binge watch all the videos, and I realized that Jen's content was so much more than Disney, and even so much more than travel. It was made with love, it was compassionate, empathetic, joyful, and just content that made you feel good when you watched it and like you were part of a community. And from that moment on, I was like, oh man, I wonder if Jen LaForge would ever come and be on the Advancing Women Podcast. And aside from being a brilliant content creator and just a wonderful human being, I want to tell you a little bit more about Jen LaForge. At 46, after raising three sons and a 25-year career, including everything from serving as an ordained pastor to being an operations manager for a major retailer, she took a one-year sabbatical to find out what she wanted to be when she grew up. It resulted in her current day job, where she talks to herself in her house and also sometimes travels and documents her adventures to her over 80,000 subscribers. She lives happily in the Atlanta suburbs with her husband of 34 years and their three rescue dogs, which she has indicated to me today may be joining us at any given time. I am so elated to be chatting with you today and to welcome you to the podcast, Jen.
Oh, Kimberly, you know, I always laugh now that I've been on people's podcasts because I didn't realize until I was on podcasts that the person being interviewed writes those intros, not the sweet words you said, but like the actual biographical part themselves. And now I'm laughing because then the person always says, oh, those glowing words you just said. And then I'm thinking, yeah, the glowing words that you sent them in the form of an email.
I know, I love that too. You send in the bio and they say the things and you're like, oh, wow. So I do appreciate your honesty and forthrightness here with that, Jen. But I did have some impromptu commentary in there as well.
Yes, and that was very, very sweet. I spent the better part of yesterday listening to a lot of your back episodes of your podcast, which, you know, especially the one that you did with your friend who's a fellow academic, the one about advice that women give to women in business and so forth. That's so enlightening. And I'm just so grateful for the work that you do. I mean, as a woman who has been in the position where you are, where you fight your way through and you're like the anomaly and you get kind of the, oh, but you're special attitude. And so every day you have to show up and fight internally, can't show that outside. I have so much respect for where you are. I even had one of my viewers reach out and say, oh my gosh, she's a professor at my university. And I'm so excited that you're getting to sit down with her. So you have quite the fan base yourself.
Oh, that's thank my you. Point and yay. That. I suspect we have similar fans because we have powerful women who look for joy in life, but are also realistic about the challenges and find empowerment in being able to not only transcend, but thrive and power through. So,
and didn't you used to think it was one or the other, that either a woman was fun and creative and was adventurous, or she was serious and academic and a good business person? We were raised, there wasn't both.
I totally agree, Jen. There's even research called the tightrope bias, and it's women needing to balance the tightrope between being this likable person and being seen as competent. Mm. And so many of us are like, why do I have to choose? Men don't, right? We can like men and see them as competent. And I think we're making headway, but we even have to remind ourselves that we can be very competent, doing our job really well, and still having an awful lot of fun and being just joyful, fun people. So I actually love that about women, because I do think we shine when we are doing something that we're really good at, but we're doing it with joy.
Agreed. Love that.
Which is a wonderful segue into Joyful Living with Jen LaForge, which is your channel. And I've literally seen them all. So I can't always say in this episode you said, because they're all the things. But there was one episode that I watched a while back and something jumped out at me. You talked about a grown-up gap year as you were transitioning from a career you'd been in a while. And I actually mentioned to someone the other day that I was going to do an episode on a grown-up gap year. And they were like, oh, I love that so much. And I thought, yep, Jen LaForge is on to something. Mm-hmm. So can you tell me a little bit about your journey and how you got to where you are today?
Yeah. So I started working when I was 18 years old. And I always say it was a career, but I had jobs, which is different than having a career. And I've worked in everything from formal wear to the medical profession. My LinkedIn is ridiculous. I mean, I bounced all over to all of these different jobs. We're always just kind of trying to put food on the table, pay the bills, find things that were somewhat compatible with raising my children so that I could be present with them and bring in an income. Being financially independent has always been extremely important to me. And when I became a pastor, which was probably my longest stretch, I was ordained when I was, gosh, how old was I when I got ordained? Maybe 35, I guess. And that felt like a calling to me. I loved the church where I was a pastor. I was the first woman that had ever been ordained. In fact, when they went to ordain me, this story always makes me laugh, especially in a room with other women. At the time, I was doing what happens in a lot of these mega churches where I was doing the job of the male pastors, but I wasn't receiving the tax benefits or the salary. And I was not the only woman, and there's tons of women in ministry experiencing this exact thing. They are not only doing the same job, sometimes they're doing a higher level job, and they're not receiving the tax benefits or the compensation. And I was in an elders meeting, all male, elder run church. And one of the gentlemen at the table said to me, well, I mean, what do you want to do? Marry people and bury people? And I said, yes, no laughter. This is not a funny thing. I said, yes, that is exactly what I want to be able to do. I do the job. I counsel people. I want to be able to do all of the things that a pastor would do. And that started the process. It was a very big deal to me. I still miss my congregation. I miss people that I saw their children grow up. I literally did their weddings. I did people's funerals. In fact, my last act as a pastor when I left, and I'll talk briefly about why I ended up leaving and am no longer working as a pastor, but friends of ours from the church were from Nigeria, and her father happened to be a Nigerian chief. And she was very progressive and forward and was a good friend of mine. And it is traditional for Nigerian funerals for there to be a service in every city where that person has a large contingency of family. And Dallas, Texas, where I lived, happened to be one of those cities. And she asked me if I would do his funeral, his memorial service, actually. And I walked into the room to 300 of the most beautiful Nigerian faces staring up at me. And I thought, you know, sometimes God shows up and sometimes he shows off. And I thought, if there is anything more fitting to be my last act as a pastor than this, I cannot think of what it could possibly be. It was a beautiful moment. I left due to two issues. The first was the church was starting to go backwards, as a lot of churches did in the mid-2000s, as they started to see themselves lose money, lose congregants because of being too progressive. They started a pastor training program, and I was so excited because we had all these women graduating from Dallas Theological Seminary at the time, and I was like, oh my gosh, they can be pastors. This is going to be so amazing. And I was told, oh no, this is for lead pastor positions. We're not inviting women into this program. And it cut me really deeply. On top of that, one of our sons had not come out at the time, but we both suspected was gay. And the church's position was like they were okay with it, but they were not affirming of it. And I can say it this way. You could be in the church and be gay, but you could not volunteer in the church and be gay. Okay. Mm. So it was kind of like, you can be here, but we don't really approve of your lifestyle. And a lot of churches are that way. So people think their church loves gay people. Well, I always say, unless a gay person can be the pastor, your church doesn't love gay people.
That whole story is just amazing when you think about the challenges you overcame. And it's so true of what I talk about a lot in an episode that you actually just referenced, where sometimes we're so busy telling women to find a job they love that's fun. And I don't think you shouldn't love what you do most of the time and have fun doing it. But this idea that women aren't interested in also doing all the things that go along with meaningful, purposeful work. As you said so perfectly, yes, I want to do the funerals. And so I think that's such an important thing that we sometimes don't tell women enough. We often tell men to do important work and we tell women to do fun and joyful work. And we should all be doing fun, joyful, and important work.
A mentor of mine years ago said 20% of the time, everybody has to clean the toilets. And cleaning the toilets could mean everything from literally cleaning the toilets, which I have done in jobs, or it could mean just things that you don't love about the job. And there is no job that exists, especially any job where you're going to make an income. There's going to be things about it that are not fun for you. And fun is defined differently by everybody. My bookkeeper loves her job. When I send her over all of my statements and everything, and we get ready for our monthly call, that girl is having fun. Like, I can hear it in her voice.
She found her place, right?
She found her place. For me, that is the furthest thing from fun. Now, if I asked her, will you record an episode with me for my channel? That for her would be cleaning the toilets. So it's all about figuring out, what is it that lights me up? But then accepting there's never going to be a job where there's not going to be that portion of it that you have to kind of, you know, just suck it up, put on your big.
I don't know very many professors who are like, grading is awesome.
Yeah.
I love grading. It brings me joy.
Yeah.
Teaching is awesome. Mentoring is excellent work and makes me happy and makes me have purpose. And seeing my students grow and advance and be prepared, that is lovely. That is not what grading makes me feel.
Well, and I think if it gets to the point, this is always when I am talking to people and they're like, I don't know if I should leave my job or not leave my job. I'm like, if that cleaning the toilets part starts becoming 40%, 50%, 60%, now we need to start having some serious conversations, because you should not be waking up driving to work in tears, which, by the way, I have
totally
done.
Agree. I don't know that you need work that you love all the time, but I do know that you shouldn't do work that you hate most of the time.
If your eyes open and you have that sense of just abysmal dread, like when you open the episode and you're like, you woke up this morning and you were giddy because you knew what we were going to do today. If you wake up and you have dread, and it's not just one day a week or 2 days a week, it's every single day, you need to start having a conversation with yourself about what's next. So left the church and was kind of like, okay, what do I do now? Because unfortunately, I was in a non-denominational situation. You can't just transfer. It doesn't work that way. Right. Even though I was educated and I was ordained, all of the things. And I had a friend that worked in the corporate office at the Container Store, loved the company, loved the business model, started working part-time for them. Just, she was like, that's the best advice I can give you. Since you have no retail experience, go work for one of the stores part-time and just get a feel for what the business is like. I had an absolute ball. And within 6 months, there was an opportunity to open a new store here north of Atlanta where we live. And they transferred me here and we relocated the whole family. And I was an operations manager for them for 3 years, which honestly came as close to hitting all of my skill sets as maybe anything ever has. I loved working with customers. I loved designing custom closets. I loved sales. Mostly though, this will not surprise you, I loved my team. I loved the people, the men and women that I worked with, being able to really listen to them, to encourage them, to motivate them. I think you can do this too, Kimberly. We can look back over our careers and go, there's been this thread, this commonality through every single job, even though it spanned many different things.
Yep.
I've always been in the business of encouraging others. That is how I find purpose. So
don't you find as you get older, when you're younger, I feel like a lot of times you're still proving things and you're learning and you're earning. You learn, you earn, you discern. And now we're in the discern stage. And my husband talks about this too in his work. When you've achieved all the things and you're not proving anything anymore, the most joy is helping other people and seeing them then have their turn and their time.
Yeah. It's the most fulfilling thing, I think, that can happen for me personally. Like, if that's a thing where I end my workday and I'm like, okay, good has been done here today. You know?
Yes, totally.
Like a little bit of a superhero. You're like, okay, I helped someone learn, usually from my mistakes, not from my successes, but I encouraged someone on their own journey. And that always means the world to me. So my sons were all in high school at this point. I don't recommend having three children in 3 years if one can avoid it, because you end up with, guess what? Three teenagers
sage
at the
advice.
Same time. Yeah.
I have to tell you though, I have two best friends and one of them has a similar situation to yours where she has right now, her oldest son is, I want to say 24, and then she's got twins.
Yeah, that was me.
A boy and a girl that are about 4 years younger. So she had kind of three littles all at once that she, you know, got through all that and is now like you enjoying the joy of being friends with your adult children, which is something I look forward to.
It's incredible. But those teenage years are rough going. Yeah. And my husband is an airline pilot for a major airline. So he was gone a lot. I was trying to work full time. The rumors you hear about being any kind of management in retail are true. It's rough. It's rough in the streets of retail. It's a lot.
Totally.
And I was stretched way too thin. There was not enough time to deal with all of the things that were going on. And we were in a financial position, fortunately, where I could go down to part-time. I could weigh back off. And then once I got them graduated and we all made it out alive, whoop, whoop.
Yay.
Everybody got a diploma, and some of them not the traditional way. Keep in mind, none of my children, you and I talked about this, none of my children are traditionally educated. Shall we say it that way? None of them meet the mold for what traditional public education caters to. So there were days where I was like, I don't think these boys are going to graduate high school. I don't think this is going to work out. So by the time we finally did, I was so happy for them, happy for me, got them all settled in their college lives. And then I was like, okay, now what do I want to do? I had always intended to go back to some kind of career again. I didn't really want to go back into retail. I'm like, do I need to go back to school? Do I need to get a postgraduate degree? What does that need to look like? And I came up with this idea of doing a grown-up gap year. And if you don't know what a gap year is, it is a tradition that we don't do enough in the United States, but it's done a lot in other countries. I know Australia is big on gap years. I think Europe, some places are big on gap years. It's a year you take when you graduate high school where you travel, you learn, you educate yourself, and you kind of just settle to kind of try to decide what's next. I wish we did it more for our seniors in high school and that it was more socially acceptable, because I think it's a really beneficial thing to do. And then I thought, okay, that's what I need. I need a year. And you know, in your field, a sabbatical, that's the same way in the ministry, we call it a sabbatical. It's a really, really good thing to do. And we in America do not give ourselves permission to take even 2 weeks off feels indulgent. Yeah. Let alone to take an entire year and be like, okay, what would this look like? So I decided that I was just going to travel. I was just going to do what I wanted. And a good friend of mine that I had met through the Container Store said, why don't you document it on YouTube? I think you would be amazing on YouTube. It could be a business for you, but even if it isn't, you'll have this video diary of what you did this year. And it will be a really good thing for you to share with friends and family and all the things.
Now, she was right. You are awesome on YouTube. So I hope you've said thank you for that sage advice.
I tell her that all the time. She, in fact, tried to get me a corporate position where she is right before I decided to start doing YouTube full time and like making that decision. And that job interview and subsequently not being offered that job, but realizing being in a corporate office again. It was one of those things where I was on the interview and I was like, well, this isn't enough money, so I'm going to ask for this amount, which was in a ridiculous amount for the position they were hiring me for. And they were like, okay.
Yeah, you're almost trying to get them to not offer you this job. I've had other friends who've done that before. I'm just going to throw something crazy out there and they'll say no and make the decision for me. And then they don't even flinch.
Well, and then I was like, okay, but you know, I've got all this freedom now and you want to only offer me 2 weeks vacation to start and that's not going to work. So I want 6 weeks vacation to start. And I'm calling Scott. I'm like, they're never going to go for this. So this is a done deal. And then they came back. Okay. It's like, wow. All right, y'all are not making this easy. Now, the good news is I finally interviewed with who I would be reporting to, and we were not a good fit. And the reason we would not have been a good fit, she was a lot younger than I am, and it was obvious that she was, I don't like the word intimidated because it has a negative connotation.
Yeah.
And I don't know what word to use. Probably threatened is the right word.
Right, right.
I'm a lot. And
yeah, me too.
What people don't know about me is if you get past that, I will be the best coworker you ever had. I will never do anything to take you down. I will only do things to lift you up.
Absolutely.
But when someone is younger and they're not quite settled, and I think I was probably this way when I was younger too, you don't really want someone working for you that you feel threatened by.
Yeah. At that time, she probably didn't have the Advancing Women podcast to help her understand the persisterhood.
Water levels go up, all boats rise.
That's
like there's room for all of us. But I walked out of that meeting. It was like the door didn't just close. It like slammed shut. And I was in the parking lot and I was like, I'm talking to Scott again because he's always my biggest defender and the one I talk it all through with. I'm like, I don't think they're going to offer me the job because that was not a good match at all. B, even if they offered it to me, no way. I cannot go back to that world. I have no desire to go back to working 45, 50, sometimes 60 hours a week. I'm done. Now, this was pre-pandemic. Who could have possibly known what was going to happen next? But it turned out to be the best decision of my life to throw myself into YouTube, to really turn it into a business. And I, you know, I'm not going to lie and say I started it as a hobby. I knew that I potentially wanted it to become a business. So I set it up that way from day one. I wanted to be set up for success. And I didn't want to have to backtrack and redo a bunch of things if it happened to blow up, which is what you should always do, right? If you don't believe in your own ability, nobody else is going to believe in you either. So yeah, and then here we are 6 years later. So now I have a tiny little team. I replaced my full-time income about 2 years ago and have just been going up on that ever since. And I have ultimate autonomy and freedom. And it's gotten a little less so now that I have a team, because then you feel like, okay, now people are relying on me to pay their bills, which is different.
Right,
But I absolutely love it. It is the most joyful work I have ever done. Again, it's not perfect work. There's parts of it that I really don't like. But as far as jobs go, this is a pretty good one.
Yeah, I do think you found something that you're really good at. But also, I talk about this a lot. If you eat food that someone has prepared with love, it's always going to taste better than when they just did the recipe and did all the things. And if you watch content from a person who's doing this as a business, which of course you are, you see that and you appreciate the respect for your time and the professionalism and the quality of the content, and all of those things are important. But it just tastes better when it was made with love, and you can feel that. And I do feel that in the work you do, which is why I'm kind of fangirling a little bit to even have you on the podcast. And it's just really exciting to me. And a few of the things you said, I just want to talk about, because they're grounded in some of the research that I think is so interesting for ambitious women. Monero and Sullivan are researchers, and this is going back to the early 2000s. I think it was like 2006. And they created this model called the Kaleidoscope Career Model. And they interviewed thousands of professionals across the United States and created this metaphor of a kaleidoscope. And that's basically describing how a person's career alters in response to alternating needs. And you talked about that a lot, whether the need is for authenticity or balance or different challenges in your life or where you are in your family, you're rotating varied aspects, right? Sometimes the career's on the forefront and sometimes it's in the background while the children are in the forefront or the marriage is in the forefront. forefront, or the self-care needs to be in the forefront, and all of these things. And I love that metaphor because I think it's spot on for women who tend to be really good at that, in part out of necessity, because we have to find the best fit among our work demands, our family, our personal lives and interests, and all of those changes. And it's wonderful to hear you talk about that. And I think it's a story that a lot of women, I mean, I don't think a lot of women were pastors for 10 years. So, I mean, props, that is like a totally unique thing. However, I can't help but think anyone listening can see that not only is it okay to have a kaleidoscope career, it's actually not that unusual. And it's probably really healthy to allow yourself some grace to say, I can't be all those things all at once, all the time. And I'm still that person, right? Because I know when we walk away sometimes from work and we focus on our children, there's that slight loss of who you are. And I think it's not a loss. I think it's a kaleidoscope. And that's just not what's in that frame right now. So I love what you're saying here. And I love how that has been your experience.
I wish, too, that we would allow men to embrace that as well, because I think practicality dictates, it really depends on your individual jobs. His job is very, very structured and very inflexible and very, quite frankly, not conducive to normal family life. So we knew my job had to be more flexible. And I was very lucky when I was a pastor of the church where I worked, had childcare available. We had free childcare in the summer. My kids grew up in a very good environment where they could be at work with me. I had an amazing assistant because if they were sick, unless they were really, really contagious, they're going to work with mom. And I had an office, and her name was Sherry Sharp. To this day, we stay in touch. Absolutely adored her. My kids have such warm memories of her because she would take care of them basically when I would be in meetings all day, and they'd be literally laying in sleeping bags on the floor of my office with, you know, their little TVs set up, and they didn't have iPads back then. They just literally had little television that we would bring and plug in. But I think if you're going to make a decision to have a family, whether you are two dads, two moms, if you're a single mother, single father, somebody in your life has to be able to step into the gap. Yeah. Grandma and grandpa need to be nearby. It needs to be the other parent. And you have to decide which one of you can flex. And maybe it's something that is so fluid that you take turns who's able to flex. But you can't have, in my view, two very, very rigid jobs and raise a family. It's not conducive. Well, you can, but someone's going to pay the price.
Absolutely. I can affirm through my research, actually, when I was doing my dissertation research, I was interviewing women in the Fortune 500 who were in the middle, and the decision-making of, do I want to get to the top or not? And what would that mean for my family? What are the choices and the decisions I have to make? And here's what was really interesting. Unsurprisingly, they talked about how they would be uncomfortable to ask their spouse to step down or take a step back. And we know that that is true of women. They're uncomfortable to ask their husbands to do that, whereas men are much more comfortable just because of social conditioning and societal expectations. But they did feel this. A lot of times women feel like they can't compete in corporate with men who have wives who stay at home. And I've heard that in my interviews. But here's what's really interesting about what you said. A couple of the women I interviewed in my research were members of the LGBTQ plus community. And there was one woman in particular who said, my wife and I both work in this company, and we are now having our second child, and we have decided that one of us has to take a step back. Yes. And I thought, yes, women typically are the ones who take the step back. But what she began to get me thinking about, and what became a large part of what I looked at in my research and what other researchers have looked at too, is just what you're saying, which is we don't really have a workforce that was designed for two people to give 100% to the workforce. And now we've got women in large numbers in the workforce wanting careers and children, which is something men have always been entitled to. And you have this unique situation. And I do think in some ways, the social conditioning of women is why, but in some ways, I think we are good at doing lots of different things well. And research does show that men are typically a little bit more linear and good at one thing. And now this is chicken or the egg, right? Are we conditioned constantly since we're young to believe certain ways? And, you know, you can go back and forth on that. But nonetheless, your point is well taken and well supported. It is just not possible for someone not to have that flexibility.
I think somebody has to take the primary caregiver role, period.
Totally.
It doesn't matter who it is. But when the school calls and the child has 103 degree temperature, who is going to leave work and go get the child? Now, again, that might vary. It's not that it necessarily has to be the same parent every single day. But I think if you don't have a discussion about that, and, you know, maybe if you're in a situation where you have enough money to throw at it, you know, maybe the nanny is the one taking care of that, which I would argue that's great too, but there's still an emotional component there. You can't outsource everything. You and I were talking about this. Like, even if the money is there to outsource everything, now you're an HR manager for a team of people and life just gets really, really complex. And when you're trying to raise kids, you don't need things to be more complex. You need things to be as streamlined as possible. So yeah, I think the whole idea, I can't believe we're not further along on this than we are, to be quite frank, with all of the years we've had women working.
And contributing in big ways and important ways.
It isn't shocking because we've had political forces in play to force us back, you know, post-World War II, forcing women out of the workforce for monetary reasons. And then you had, you know, the Equal Rights Amendment and Phyllis Schlafly and all of that forcing us back for political reasons. So it is three steps forward, two steps back.
We have come a long way in some ways, but that men are still not mostly judged for their breadwinner roles and women for their homemaker roles. I have yet to hear society say a working full-time mom is a great mom. And I feel like they believe that a working dad is. And so we're not there yet, even in terms of a societal expectation. It takes time. And in the process, we are doing what we need to do to get the fulfillment and to utilize our skills and to find that balance, which is so challenging.
I will never forget, both of my twins have dyslexia, which makes sense because you're born with it and they are genetically identical. And we had enough money to send them to a very wonderful private school in Texas called the Fairhill School, if anyone from there, or if you're in Texas and you're looking for a school, all of the teachers have dyslexia. So it is this beautiful little environment. And no matter what they teach, they're teaching it with reading and writing along with the thing. And it's all done through the lens of that all the students have dyslexia. So it's this magical place. It's also a very, very expensive place. And we could afford it for exactly 1 year, but we knew the twins needed that year. The problem is it was 45 minutes from my house and another like 35 minutes from my office. So for that entire year, we did work out a carpool, but I was waking up basically at 4:30 in the morning in order to make all of the pieces work so I could drop them off at 7:15, get to work by 7:45, leave work in time to go pick them up, and then I would work from home for the rest of the day. So it was a very challenging year for me, but we knew it was worth it. We had to make it happen, whatever. And I saw my boss at Starbucks. I had just dropped the kids off and I was at the Starbucks that was by the church. And he said, "You don't look good." And I said, "I'm not good. I'm kind of a mess, honestly." And I said, "You know, this commute is killing me with the kids and I'm trying to make it all work." And he says to me, this still lives rent-free in my head, "Well, it's because you're doing two full-time jobs." Yeah. And the anger that I felt in that moment, and this is a man who is a dad, by the way, aren't you also doing, so you don't think being a parent is a full-time job no matter who you are? Because I'm pretty sure that the minute that your babies were born, parenting also became a full-time job for you, sir.
Right.
So because I am a woman though, the reason that I'm like this and I'm frazzled and I'm hurried and I'm doing all these things is because I am trying to do too much.
Yeah.
And I was stunned into silence. I mean, this is my boss too. So he's the senior pastor of our church. So how am I going to respond to that? But the way that I felt not supported, not cared for the job I was showing up to do, not seen, like I've thought through the scene so many times and thought, what were all of the other things he could have said to me that were not that? Because yeah. he shamed me.
He probably thought he was giving you credit, but I agree with you that we often see motherhood and fatherhood very differently, and we're parents in this.
Yeah, we're both responsible legally, emotionally, spiritually, nutritionally for this child. And guess what? If something should go wrong, they're going to hold both of us equally responsible for what happened to this child. So get on board. Like, we are both doing two full-time jobs.
It's really a mindset shift. And what we do here, this conversation we have here, these are the ways that we try to just bring to the forefront the complexity of it, the reality of it, holding it up to the light and saying, it's real. It's not working great. And how do we work through it?
And I think if I were a boss, in that situation, you know how you're like, okay, what if the shoe had been on the other foot? And I think I just would have said, let's chat later today about how I can better support you while you're going through this time.
That's such a pie in the sky thing. I love that for all of us. And I think it would be very unusual for a person to report that that was the feedback they got.
But you know what might happen?
Because it's so logical and simple.
But because you have a podcast, maybe someone will hear this today, and then tomorrow they will come across a coworker. And by the way, it doesn't have to be a coworker that reports to you or doesn't report to you or whatever, just a frazzled coworker. Yeah. And your response to them is, maybe if it's a peer, do you have time for coffee later? Because I'd love to talk about how I could better support you while you're going through this.
Yeah, that's awesome.
I mean, what a line. And it's not committing to anything. You're not giving up tons of time, or you're not saying I am or am not going to do this thing. You're saying, let's chat about how I can better support you as someone who cares about you. Crazy.
I love that. And I am with you. You know, maybe I'll think about how I can do that today. I want to take one step back, though, because I hear you speak and I hear the wisdom of 50-something. I hear the wisdom of a person who's been through a lot of different stages and things. And that makes me think about what you do with your channel. And I would argue that this is seen as a young person's game, being a YouTuber or being a content creator. And you as a content creator of a certain age, which is wonderful for me because we're about the same age. And I think that's part of why I find so much joy and camaraderie and community in.
You were born in 71, right? Because I'm 1970.
1971,
Yep.
You know, too often I think as women, we hear that our best years are behind us when you get into your 40s and 50s. So I'm very passionate about the stories of women who are crushing it and doing something cool and new and unexpected later in life. And Octavia Spencer, the actress, brilliant from Hidden Figures and The Help, she said, finding fame in my 40s allowed me an adult perspective on my career. I truly understood that you have to enjoy it and appreciate it. Mm-hmm. And I love that. And I want to hear about your experience as a person in this young person's game. What was hard? What was easier maybe because of your experience?
Yeah, so I love the term a woman of a big age. I've been saying that a lot lately. I have a couple content creator friends that will use that term. And I'm like, there's a, you know, me as a girl of a big age.
I'm going to write that down.
It's a little sassier than all the other terms we use you know, women over 40, which, by the way, we lump women over 40 into the same category. If you're 40, 50, 60, 70, you're all women over 40. You know, and
you
think about how much we change and evolve in all of those different decades.
So true.
Cracks me up. So it's so funny because I hardly ever think about the fact that I am playing a young adult's game unless someone else brings it up. I just love what I do. I have always loved communicating. I found a platform that allows me to do it on my own terms. And I am so grateful that the one thing, getting back to when we talked about the 20% of the times you have to clean the toilets, the biggest negative of the job is the hurtful comments, the mean comments, the things you'll read about yourself online. And I cannot fathom how my psyche would have dealt with that as a 25-year-old. I don't know how these men and women that do this
do it. Wow, that's such a great point, because as we become more comfortable in ourselves and we look to the inside versus the external for our understanding of who we really truly are, and we trust our people around us who give it to us straight, that know us, it probably does equip you in a way that a lot of these younger people have to kind of work through.
It changes how you view the person doing it too, because when you're of a big age, you know that someone who's acting like that is jealous, is unhappy, is insecure. That's why anybody badmouths anybody ever in the history of people badmouthing other people. It is never about the other person. It's always about the person saying the negative thing. And the unkindness is a reflection of what's going on inside of them. It isn't about me.
Yeah.
I did not know that at 20 or 25 or even 30. So now at 53, I'm going to be 54 in July. It is a very different perspective on all of that, the ugly part of being a content creator. You know, anytime you stick your head up above the crowd, someone's going to take a shot at it. That's
totally
the way it works. So I knew that going in. And yeah, I mean, I had been tossed around by many careers where I was in front of people a lot and put up with a lot of different things. But I feel very much in a better position because of that. And then also because of the fact that I can flex out of this career into something else if this should all blow up. It's so precarious. And these young people that are making this their career and they're pushing off other things that maybe they're skilled and talented and could be doing in lieu of being a content creator. I'm like, oh, okay. So I'm not doing this because I look good and I'm worried it's going to fade. If you're 25, you're going to be 35 and then you're going to be 45 and you're not going to look the same as you did.
Right.
I'm so glad I started this in my late 40s, because I already looked old. Like, I don't
know. No, Jen, I'm going to stop you for a minute though and tell you that I've watched your videos then, and I see you now, and you are far more beautiful today than you were in those videos. And I'm not just saying that. There's something that happens. It's part confidence, but it's part good hair products and knowing what looks good on you and not caring. So much of what you talk about on your show sometimes is, this is what works for me. This is what makes me feel good. And you come from that place, and it shows.
Well, thank you. I was watching a video, an older video the other day, because I was looking for a particular product I couldn't find. I was like, what was that thing I used to use? And my voice was pitched differently, which is really weird. And the real reason for that, which is another podcast episode, so I will say this in one sentence, and I'm going to purposely leave things that people aren't going to know. I received therapy for post-traumatic stress disorder while I've been a YouTube creator, which don't necessarily recommend, but when you look at some of my earlier videos, if you think that I was a different person when I started than I am now, that's because I 100% am a different person than I was then. I had been assaulted when I was 16 years old, and I was part of a Me Too movement type thing. There were many of us involved. There was a lawsuit. There was a lot of drama, and there was a lot of therapy that was required because of the lawsuit, but that led me to this discovery of trauma recovery that has completely upended who I am as a human being. So I feel like I just started being myself literally like 2 years ago.
Yeah.
So I have been masking and hiding, and I started having PTSD episodes when I was 20 and had them until 2 years ago when I started really, and the therapy really wrapped up 2 years ago. So, you know, pandemic time is different than normal time. So none of my years fit right in my head. I feel like the years of pandemic kind of all glom together is like,
oh, totally. Thing. I'll say something happened 2 years ago and then I'm like, well, wait, but it was before COVID.
Exactly.
So like at least 4 years
ago. So I know as I'm saying 2 years, that's not right. But nonetheless, I would say, because I always love to say this whenever someone asks to interview me, this is one sentence I'm always going to get in there. If you have past trauma that you have not done the work on, you cannot begin and live the rest of your life in freedom until you go back and do the work from the trauma. And I want that not to be true, because it's a lot of work. It's painful work. It gets worse before it gets better. But I had physical ramifications of that, autoimmune disorder as a result of that, all of the things. And it is probably the biggest gift you can give yourself, your family, your career, your prosperity. You cannot live in deep breaths until you go back and do the work. And so that is really important to me.
Yeah. It's such a great point that I don't think we were intending to make, but I'm so glad that it emerged. And I would also say, how many of those years helped prepare you for then when you were healed? Yeah. To be able to comfortably talk about it and have an audience that you could now speak to. You were still learning and growing as a podcaster, and then you came to this place of healing, and now you've built something where that gives you the opportunity to share it in a different kind of way than you might have.
Well, not to mention the fact that the flexibility of the job when I started my YouTube channel allowed me to be going through therapy and have a day where I was completely out of commission and not have to show up to work. That is not something that I would have had the freedom to do had I not made that transition. So talk about chicken and the egg. Was I able to do the work because I finally had a job that was conducive to me being able to do the work? Because it'll take you out. Baseball bat to the knees type style, take you out. So that would be my one thing. If you do start doing the work and you are in a conventional job, maybe schedule therapy at the end of the workday so that you don't have to go back and deal with everything.
Yeah, it really brings it back to that kaleidoscope and where things were in the forefront in your journey. And I always end every episode, and I don't want to end this episode. Please let me just keep talking to you all day. But I know we can't do that, so we'll have to talk again sometime. But I always end with a manifest statement or a key takeaway. And there's a quote from Helen Keller that says, "Life is either a daring adventure or nothing at all." And your life that you've talked about today has been very brave, especially that last part. It has been an adventure, but it has been daring, and you've been brave in it. Mm-hmm. And I love that. And hearing you talk about that is just a small glimpse into the things you talk about, the way you make people feel, and what you get out of your channel. So you must, listeners, you must go to Jen's YouTube channel, Joyful Living with Jen LaForge, and I'll put the URL in the show notes. You can also find her at jenlaforge.com, JenLeffOrge.
You can spell it anyway, though.
It'll still pop up. Yes,
it'll still come up.
Yeah, you're quite well known, Jen. You pop up quite easily.
As my assistant always says when I complain about something, she said, "Well, did you tell them you're Jen LaForge?"
Listen, this is Jen LaForge. Don't listen to her YouTube channel.
Kimberly, you are such a breath of amazing, intelligent, vibrant, creative, fresh air. It is so amazing to chat with a woman who is as educated and intelligent as you are academically, but also emotional intelligence, which doesn't always go hand in hand.
Thank you. You
really possess that.
That means more to me than anything.
Yeah. Well, it's true. And it's something that I hope every day when you have the hard days, you can be super grateful for, because no one could teach you that. The emotional intelligent piece, you were born with that, hardwired into who you are. So thank you, Jen, for our benefit.
Well, I'm going to take that as affirmation that you will come back and be on the podcast again.
Yes, I will.
I'm so grateful. I know you're busy. I know you've got all kinds of fancy travel that I'll be watching episodes on soon, and I can't wait for them. But thank you so much for being here today and being a part of the podcast. It was really great chatting with you.
It was wonderful. Thanks for having me.
You're very welcome. For more resources, you can visit my website, www.advancingwomenpodcast.com, and connect on Instagram at Advancing Women Podcast. I love getting your feedback, so please email me at drdsimone@advancingwomenpodcast.com. I just want to thank Joe Jacobs, the audio warrior who wrote the music for this podcast, and a huge thanks to Heather Harris, the creative warrior who designed the Advancing Women podcast logo. And thanks to all of you for joining me here today.